This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
There's a reason why you should never work with animals, children, or siblings. Murphy's Law Radio Show, only on Joy 94.9.
Anna Murphy.
Yes.
Oh, this morning has been very, very busy with celebrities, but I'm telling you what, I'm a little bit nervous actually. Because I've been dying for years. I've wanted to interview this man because he's got such history. He was the front man for one of the biggest Australian bands ever, Icehouse. Ivor Davies, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh my God. Very excited to have you on the phone.
We're so excited to have you on the phone, Ivor.
We were just talking, actually. I was saying to Anna that the first time I really remember Icehouse as a band is We Can't Get Together when I was roller skating at the Morty Alec roller skating rink. That was the hottest song of the time.
Oh, no, those were the days when you could roller skate.
We can't do it now. We might break something and never recover.
Well, I wouldn't advise it, no.
Listen, a huge past 18 months for you guys. Obviously, White Heat 30 hits has gone platinum. How do you feel about being back selling huge number of albums for Icehouse again?
Oh, look, it's a real blast, and it was certainly unexpected. I mean, it was gold within a week. And,
oh, wow.
It was quite incredible, really. But I mean, the main thing for me is to be doing shows again and see the fact that the music's travelled down generations, which is quite an extraordinary thing. And I guess it's probably not really that mysterious when you think about things like the internet and devices and so on. And that's the only explanation I can have for it, is the fact that technology has changed so much. And even in my own children have gone back exploring the 60s and the 70s and inevitably the 80s. But it is fantastic to see so many young people in our audience.
Was it something that you ever thought when you put Icehouse together that you'd be sort of 30 years down the track doing this? Like, would you have ever expected it if somebody had tapped on your shoulder and said you'll still be singing Icehouse songs down the track?
Well, the answer to that is absolutely not. And in fact, I was a great cynic right from the beginning. And we started off, really as a covers band, as you probably know. And it was great fun on a Friday and a Saturday night. And for a long time, we did it for petrol money. And I thought, yeah, this is great fun, but it's not a proper job. And in fact, it wasn't until really I received the first check from the first royalty of the first album that I actually thought, oh,
there's something here.
I could make a little bit of money out of this.
A little bit.
Very long, so I better do something sensible with the money. And I actually used that first check for a deposit on a house, and luckily didn't fritter it away. But every year that went past, I was still kicking myself and going, well, this is probably the last year this is going to be happening. So no, it's been well ahead of me the whole way.
Listen, Icehouse was really peaking at a time when there were some giants in Australian music like INXS, The Vinyls, Midnight Oil. Who were your besties on the road at that time?
Well, we always... two things. Melbourne was always quite a different music scene than Sydney, and still is, I believe,
yep.
And certainly very much more a music community. And I don't know whether it's because physically Sydney is so kind of spread out and doesn't really have the same sort of centre as Melbourne does, but Sydney bands didn't really kind of hang out together. And in fact, Keith and I were very shy at the beginning, and remain really that way. And a lot of people thought that we were very standoffish, but in actual fact, we just had no confidence. although we crossed paths many times with many bands, and in fact, I was at a function the other night with Peter Garrett, and he had a couple of stories about hearing being in Austin in Texas, and actually the band heard Great Southern Land wafting through the air, and they walked blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks through Austin looking for the source of this, and came across an American covers band playing Great Southern Land.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, we did cross paths in very strange places and at odd times, but I don't think we really kind of hung out, as it were.
Now, you were saying, okay, so you're a bit shy, but so fast forward to 2013, you were made a member of the Order of Australia for your service to music and entertainment. What an achievement. But did you gloat to Peter Garrett when you saw him about that?
Well, actually, he was wearing his award.
Of course he was.
I wasn't wearing mine, so I couldn't very well gloat. You know, in a funny sort of way, in the early days, Midnight Oil and us were kind of rivals, because we both had residencies at a very big pub on the northern beaches of Sydney, and the northern beaches was both of our home turf, really. That's where we both started out. So Midnight Oil would play one weekend at the Royal Antler, as it was then called, and we would play the following weekend. And, of course, we shared... obviously some members of our audience, and on the other hand, you know, our audiences were quite different, a good content of them, because Midnight Oil were definitely a surfing kind of punk band, and we were definitely an inner city, dressed in black punk band. It was a different kind of breed, really.
I love that, like turf wars between rock bands. It's great.
Exactly.
Hey listen, just on today's music, from someone that's had such a long history and works so super hard for the whole time, what's your sort of thoughts on people like your Justin Biebers, who have created huge sales and profiles, and yet musically really haven't delivered a lot of substance?
Well, I think I think it must be very problematic for them in terms of their kind of personal assessment of their careers, because careers which are made fairly quickly, and I guess I'm referring generally to people who've benefited from immediate wide television exposure, for example, must find it very tricky to make that enormous jump from relative obscurity to absolute saturation. And I was always very wary of the machine, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. And in fact, we had an opportunity at one point. We were offered to tour with either David Bowie or Peter Gabriel. And in fact, I had to, both of whom were sort of at the peak of their careers, and I had this sort of unfortunate task of having to choose which one we would tour with. to a small extent, I chose to tour with David Bowie, who was then enjoying his absolutely biggest record ever, which was spawned by a single called Let's Dance, which was the first American number one that he'd ever got. And the shows were just enormous. There were 70,000 people a show, and part of the reason I wanted to do that was to see how he was surviving the incredible exposure that he was having at that time. And I don't know that I ever got any serious answers about that, but it was certainly very interesting to see that sort of monumental machinery grinding away with David Bowie at the top of it.
What was he like, David Bowie?
Well, he was very nice, but we did hang out and go to clubs and so on. But I always felt that he was very much on guard and aware of the way he presented himself. And I guess part of that sort of said to me, well, this is a very dangerous area. This amount of celebrity is potentially very dangerous. And I think he survived very well, but obviously there are others who have not.
Well, now, look, you've just talked about instant fame and television broadcasting, making stars overnight. And I was wondering, have you ever been approached to be like a mentor or a coach on one of those shows? And what would be your thoughts about it?
The truth be known, all of them, and is the answer to that. I think really it's my self-doubt that probably caused me to turn them all down, because I was unsure as to whether I was really the right sort of person for those kinds of shows. Apart from anything else, I'd definitely have to be the nice judge, because I just cannot bring myself to say anything nasty,
and
of course that doesn't make for very interesting television, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately.
On the other hand, where I have been able to, I have in a much sort of quieter and less public way tried to help various people along their way. And in fact, playing with us for the last 3 years, and he continues to play with us, is Michael Painter, who of course was a contestant in The Voice. You know, he and I have a kind of Yoda-like relationship, which we laugh about frequently. But
he's a great singer.
I'm constantly giving him a piece of advice, capped off with "young one" at the end of it. You know.
Now, Ivor, speaking of you being a super nice guy, you do a lot of charity work, which is obviously fantastic, including working for the Salvation Army as a door knocker. Now, if Ivor Davies rocked up at my door for donations, I think I'd die.
Well,
what's the general reaction?
The thing that I can bring to people like the Salvation Army is a bit of profile, and I think that's probably, I'd be not necessarily a terribly effective door knocker, but certainly what I am able to do is to help them out with launching their campaigns and getting getting their story out to a wider audience, and that's generally what I do, and that's goes for any number of charities for which I'm an ambassador. In fact, this last weekend I performed for the Special Olympics, and I also attended an event for the Nordhoff Robbins Music Therapy Charity, which is a great charity, and it helps people enormously through the power of music.
That sounds fantastic. Now, listen, there is what I'm excited about is you guys are back on tour. You got the Platinum Concert Series coming up, is that right?
That's correct. And as I said, we've got...
What do I need to do to get backstage with you boys?
Well, it ain't that hard, really. You know?
Buy you a bourbon?
Well, you know, we have a great time because the band has been, you know, a lot of us have been together for a frightening amount of time, you know, going up to 30 years, which is very interesting when you think about how long that really is. But we have always been split between Melbourne and Sydney. So there's three guys from Melbourne, three guys from Sydney. So we don't actually get to kind of hang out or see each other very often.
Boys getting back together.
So when we get back together, you'll know about it. Yeah, exactly. So it's time for a party, and that's generally what we do.
Well, there's the huge amount of concerts coming up, which obviously I'm sure you're excited about. The date for Melbourne, for our Melbourne audience, the 30th and 31st of January at the Palms in Melbourne. If you want other dates for all the other concerts, you can go to Ticketek. I think most of the tickets are sold on there. Or you can go to Ice House. Facebook.com/Ice House, and all the dates should be on there. Is that correct?
That is correct, and we have a huge following on Facebook, and it's a great medium, really, because it allows us to get a sort of immediate feedback, and people have been posting messages there requesting various songs and so on, all of which we process and keep in mind. So it's certainly a bit different than it used to be, but it's a great tool to sort of stay in touch, I guess.
Absolutely.
It's the best way to describe it.
Well, Ivor, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning, because it's been something that I've dreamed of doing, is interviewing you for such a long time. So thank you very much.
So have I, since I had my favourite song on my mixtape that I taped off Top 40 was Electric Blue. Way back when.
Excellent.
So, I'm so excited.
We're gonna leave our audience on this one. Now, this track you did a few years ago, it's called Lay Your Hands on Me, became a huge gay anthem. Did you know that?
I sort of did, because, in fact, I was invited by Sydney DJ to go along and attend the Sleaze Ball.
fantastic.
which I did do, and right on the stroke of midnight, he played that song. And,
wow.
And it was fantastic, actually, to see everybody dancing to it.
It's amazing. It's such an uplifting track. It's amazing. And, look, once again, we thank you so much for your time. And this is Ivor Davies. This is Lay Your Hands on Me on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.